Good morning, Willie.
Morning, Schwartzy. Morning, Dustin.
So we're trying to get ahead
Morning,
of the
fellas.
curve here. We've been recording our podcast on Monday morning and dropping it on Monday morning. Now we're days ahead of schedule, so hopefully we can keep that going. Me being away for a week didn't help.
Well, I was going to say, we went two podcasts in a row that week. And then the week you got back, or we didn't do it, where didn't we'll do it till Monday. Now here we are doubling up again, you know. So it's your fault.
Everything is my fault.
I will.
Everything.
I will.
It's just the way it works, right, Dustin? When you're married. Oh, did I say that?
Oh Lord. Usually,
Dustin Loftus. We've got the great leather worker from Oklahoma, correct? Which city?
Oh, I don't know about the great part, but I am from Oklahoma.
Oklahoma.
Well,
born and raised, a son of Will James, not Will James, Will Rogers.
Will Rogers.
A true.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, we're glad to have you on board. Neither of us, Wilson nor myself, have ever met you. So hoping to
Nope.
get more acquainted here as time goes along. But I've been following Dustin's work. I don't follow many people on there, but I sure watch his stuff and pretty handy leather worker. So
Wow.
Thank you.
Looking
Appreciate
forward
that.
to hearing his story. So you've how long you've been at this thing?
Let's
Full-time leather
see.
work.
I believe I started messing around with it back in 2012. This is when I first started messing around with anything. A friend of mine was he was actually like making a belt in his kitchen. A guy I rodeoed with back in the day, and he was making a belt in his kitchen. And I was just kind of watching how he did it, and he was just tracing a pattern onto the leather. And I was like, "That's how you put a pattern on leather?" Because I've drawn and done art my whole life, but then I was just like, "Huh, I may have to try that out," because I saw how he did it. And then I paid him to build me one, and when it showed up, I was like, I think I could mess around with this. So I just kind of started, bought a little kit and started messing around with it, drawing patterns on leather and stuff. So that's just kind of how I got started with it back then. But
So you don't work on paper very much. You still just go straight to the leather.
well, I started on paper. Like, I mean, I'd draw the pattern on the paper and then trace it onto the belt, you know, and all that. And then I learned that I could use a pencil and use a soft lead pencil and draw straight to the leather. And to me, it just saved me an extra step of I'd hated tracing stuff over and over again. So that worked out well for me. But been doing it that way for quite a while. Every now and then I'll still draw something on paper and try to transfer it. But for some reason, it'll always look really good on paper. And then when I put it on leather, it just looks completely different. So, and, yeah. But
Trace
yeah, that's
the translation of tracing from what looks good on paper. The width of the pencil line is incredible, right? And
yeah.
I tend to relax a little bit in the tracing process because I've already done the design, so I'm not as precise, I feel like. And then
Yeah.
you remove the paper, and you're like, oh, that looks like crap, right?
Yeah, it never looks good to me.
Interesting.
So, what are your
But I
design
yeah, I guess I just
influences?
Huh?
Your design influences early on,
Oh
it
man. Early on, I didn't even know anybody else did anything. Like I had zero. I mean, I started looking for basically as soon as I started messing around, I just started Googling how to do leather work and how to. I watched YouTube videos. You know, on how to use each tool. I didn't have anybody there helping me or anything like that. And so I had no idea whose videos I was watching. I can't even remember. There's one video. I wish I could remember his name, but I remember I watched that video hundreds of times, just trying to figure out how he made something look a certain way or whatever. But yeah, I don't even remember, you know, some of the first guys I started following. I'm pretty sure Don Gonzalez is one of them. because I imagine I watched one of his videos back in the day on YouTube or something, and then found him when I once I got Instagram and all that, and started actually being able to follow other leather workers. But I really didn't follow anybody if specifically to like for their designs or anything like that, like or like the work that they did. Like if I was following someone, it was because they were teaching how to use the tools and put stuff together and stuff like that. And because pretty much in my mind, I was like, I'm just gonna start drawing stuff, and that way, because I was like, if I wanted to be my designs and my type of stuff, like I need to draw it myself, and I don't need to necessarily look at anybody else's stuff or anything. And I was like, and I mean, the first stuff I ever did, it looked absolutely terrible. I mean, I may have something laying around here, but I mean, it stuff was going all sorts of directions, and nothing made sense. But I thought it looked amazing, you know what I mean? And I had all my buddies there telling me, "Oh man, that looks great, dude! Like, make me a belt or something," you know? Like, so yeah. I mean, I just really wanted to make a point to draw my own stuff in the beginning, and you know, now of course, now that I follow everybody and have guys that I look up to and guys that, you know, even guys that some guys that have helped me learn some different things and stuff. Like I got a lot of guys that I draw inspiration from and everything nowadays, but a lot of silversmiths too, guys that do engraving and stuff like that. That's one thing that I look at all the time. So, but
Do y'all catch grief from the leather industry? Like Schwartz, your stuff too relates to my world an awful lot with the metal engraving. Do y'all catch grief from the leather world of taking inspiration from the silversmiths or the engravers of the world?
oh, I don't know. I don't think I ever have. But
That's
I mean,
you, Schwartzy?
I've never like.
Do you, Schwartzy, do you catch the grief from it? Do you, I mean, are there leather guys like, oh, you're doing that? You're stepping out of bounds. You know what I mean? Are you getting out of our tradition? The word tradition, here we go.
Yeah, no, I haven't. I haven't really. I don't think so. If I have, I guess I've too thick-headed to see it. But you know,
I don't think anybody's.
uh-oh, we lost him.
yeah.
There he's back.
There's one book that I always used for, and you may know of it, Ron Smith's book, The Advanced Drawing of Scrolls.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That was one that I really enjoyed studying all the time. It sits right next to everything on my desk. So whenever I'm drawing stuff out or whatever, I like to reference that for a lot of different things to get ideas. But
I'll show you what mine looks like, Dustin. Uh-oh, hit a lot of buttons. It all fell apart because I used it so much. So I had to put it in a binder with sheet
yeah.
protectors because it went
There
all
you go.
apart.
Yeah.
For sure.
No, I got a funny story about when I first started doing leather work though, and it's funny now because I know the guys, or at least I know their grandkids. They've ordered some stuff from me before and whatnot. And whenever I mention this story to them, they're like, "No, there's no way that happened. That wasn't guys at our," because their granddad runs a shop in Northern California. And when I was first starting out, I was living back home in California because I'd moved out to Oklahoma in 2010, and was going to school out here and rodeoing with my wife, or she was my fiance at the time. And then my dad got sick, and so I moved back home to help take care of my dad back in California. And so when I started doing leather work in 2012, I've been doing it for probably all of about 3 months or so. And I was like, "This is it. I'm making a living doing this stuff, man." Like,
Well,
I've had two people order a belt from me, and this is what's going on. And so I put a handful of stuff together that I messed around and tooled on. And I think one was like a couple halters with like nose bands on halters or something like that, and maybe a belt. But I take it down to this leather shop, and I'm just like, hey, I want to be a leather worker, you know, like you guys need some help in here or whatever. Like, and I was just like, I'll do whatever, but you know, I'm really good. And I was like, this is my work. And they just kind of looked at it, and this one guy, he goes, yeah, you want to be a leather worker, huh? And I was like, yeah, man. Like, see, I'm doing really good. And he's like, yeah, don't quit your day job though. And I was like, well, I mean, it pissed me off kind of because I thought I was really good, you know. But I was like, that story always stuck with me, and I remember that day. I was like, you know what? I'm gonna go back in there in a couple years, and they're gonna want me to work for them or something, you know. And it's funny because now I laugh about it with them and stuff. But that story kind of stuck with me, and I always say like, it kind of lit a fire in me to actually get really good at doing leather work and realize, you know, 3 months into it, I really didn't have much going on, actually, you know. But
Good on you for not being discouraged, though. I mean,
absolutely,
yeah.
absolutely.
Well, I mean,
Confidence.
like I said, that was one of the kind of things that actually, you know, did get me to the point where, like, once I thought I could actually help some other people or something, I was like, well, maybe I'll do some classes or something to help people starting out or whatever, like teach them how to do the stuff that I, you know, went through or whatever, and learn how to draw some stuff a little better or whatever, you know, anything that I could do to help them. 'Cause I remember how actually pretty tough that story was for me to be like, man, maybe I shouldn't try to mess with this stuff at all. But at the
Well,
same time, that's just the way I've always been, was, you know, tell me I can't do it and I'm gonna definitely try to prove you wrong. But
that's the perfect attitude, you know. I mean, it's a exposure was all you were lacking. You didn't know what was good. Nobody had ever showed you anything, and so but
I had no idea about anybody.
the confidence that you had there, hey, you were, I
Yeah, they
mean,
thought it was real funny.
it's but it's of course they did, but it's perfect, man. And that you and that because you had confidence, you weren't scared to try. Because you had confidence, you weren't scared to take the criticism, you know. And
I wasn't
on.
expecting any. I thought they were going to hire me on the spot, man.
That reminds me of the story that Scott Hardy tells about getting to know Chuck
Chuck.
Storms. You've heard that story. He's a silversmith up in Alberta, takes his stuff over to Chuck because Chuck's, you know, kind of a the saddle making institution of Canada and stuff. And Scott, you know, kind of a little bit full of himself. I don't know how long he'd been doing it. He'd been doing it full time though.
Yeah, for a
And
while,
he just thought to himself, you know, I'm gonna take my stuff over to Chuck's and he's just gonna offload all these other silversmiths and he's just gonna like my stuff. And he lays his stuff out there and Chuck in those days he smoked a pipe and, you know, lit his pipe and never said anything and just kind of, you know, stern look on his face and stuff. And
Size, big size,
Scott's
right?
thinking by this time, oh, this is not good. He's taking way too much time. And then after a while, Chuck says, boy, do you ever need some help? And same thing, you know, okay, take my lumps, you know, and figure it out.
Man, I took some bad ones quite a few years actually into doing leather work. I think it must have been around 2015, maybe. So I've been doing it for a few years now, and I mean, everybody told me how good I was, and so I was like on top of the world, thinking, you know, I was it, you know. I was like, it got to my head a little bit at the time, and I, you know, I've definitely learned from that. But I got a message from a guy that I followed and really, really looked up to, and, you know, thought was he I was like, in my mind, he was the best, you know what I mean? Like, everybody told me, you know, like, oh, you're really good or whatever, and I'd be like, yeah, I'm nothing compared to these guys, like, you know, whatever. So when this guy messaged me and asked me if I wanted to do a little bit of tooling or something with him or something like that, I was just like, all right. And it was Travis Stilson.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I was, like, oh man, absolutely, like, what do you want from me? And he sends me these ideas. He needs a couple pieces for some head stalls or something like that. And I was like, all right, I got that. And so I come up with what I thought was going to be a great design and tooled it out and cut the background out for the filigree work and all that stuff. And I send it down to him and just waiting to hear back from him. And he finally gets back to me and I was like, man, what'd you think? Like, ready to go or what? And he's like, I can't use these, dude. Like, I was like, oh dude. I was like, man. He's like, yeah, I can't use those, man. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry. He's like, I'll send them back to you and all this stuff and whatever. And I was like, oh, well, I was like, how about and he's like, if you're ever around this way or something, stop by the shop and I'll see if I can help you out with anything or whatever, if you whatnot. And so I was like, well, if you're inviting me down to your shop, I was like, I'll come down there next week and I'll just spend as much time as I can with you and you can
Yeah.
show me how bad I suck, dude, like. And so I did go down there and man, I spent a day or two with him and just tried to learn as much as I could from that guy. And I mean, definitely learned quite a few different things just in the short time that I went down there and really just tried to put all that into work. Like when I got back home, tried to really implement a lot of that stuff, but I still suck at it. Like the stuff that he tried to tell me to do, I'm still like, God dang it, I can't get it right,
Well, just to boost your confidence a little bit, most people suck compared to Travis, to be honest, right?
Travis is tough.
That's
He's
a
world class. There's no doubt
he's
about
something
that.
else.
I actually talked to him yesterday on the phone, and it was I love talking to him all the time. I mean, we don't talk very often. Both of us are busy, but I have a ton of respect for his design ability and the way he, man, I a ton.
Yeah, because he got into do right about that time is when he was getting into doing all the silver work stuff too, I think somewhere around then. And yeah, I mean, he was doing it a whole different way than I'd ever seen compared to most guys. But
Yeah, he does his own little lick in the silver world too. He doesn't actually engrave. He just does that
no.
wire stuff and but golly, it's cool.
Sculpted and maybe even some repoussé, I don't know. But yeah, he's handy, that guy.
Yeah, I've always looked up to him quite a
Me too.
bit.
First
Yeah.
up, he
I
was on the
don't see as
podcast.
much of his.
Go ahead, sorry, Dustin.
No, I was just saying it's weird like the way Instagram and stuff works, like, and maybe those guys just got tired of messing with it, which I don't blame them because I do too. But I used to like, I mean, his work used to show up all the time on my feed and stuff, and it was nice. Now I actually got to go search for it or something, but if you want to see what he's up to. But yeah.
Damn social media. I've been sucking at that lately too.
It's
Workshop
worse.
Wednesday. We did that. I seen Hold On to the West yesterday, 40.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, finally, after a month, a month away or more, I
Man.
haven't been away, but I don't know. Week gets away from you, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I could throw the whole social media overboard if I real easily. I could get out of the habit pretty easy, but anyway, Dustin's got how many followers you got on Instagram? It's a pile of them. That's awesome.
Yeah, I think it's at 98.6 thousand,
Hell yeah!
right?
Wow, that's
It's
awesome.
funny though, because the way Instagram works, man, it's funny because at one point in time, I think it was when I had just done some seats or I was working on some seats or something, and so my following was just going up and up and up because I was having certain people share it and I was sharing it a bunch and just really trying to build it, and it hit 100,000 and it just stopped. Like it went from gaining like 10,000 people a day to just stop dead in the water as soon as it hit 100,000. And I thought that was kind of funny. I just laugh about it, but as soon as it hit that, it was like it just let Instagram like put a wall up. It was like, nope, you're good. Like, not, and I mean, I could not gain a follower after that. All I've done is lost them ever since then. And it's just, I don't know if it was just random fake accounts getting deleted or something or what, but I mean, it dropped down all the way, I mean, only 2,000 people, but and it seems like it's coming back up now. But I'm just kind of, I get curious about how those algorithms and stuff work sometimes when you see that, you're like, what was the reason that happened for? But I mean, I don't put a whole lot of, emphasis on how many followers or anything I have. I really don't think it's all that what it's at cracks up to be and everything, you know what I mean? But
Doesn't pay the electric bill too big, too much. I
no,
like
it doesn't. I think I've made 37 cents off of those 100,000 people. You
that.
know what I mean?
Right.
I'm
Well,
pretty sure.
I noticed the same thing, Dustin, when it hit 10,000, and I've not. I mean, it's about as organic as it can possibly be, my world, because I just haven't done much. But the minute I hit 10,000, it just creeped along, and I'm at 18,000 now, and it comes and goes, but it just kind of sits
Yeah.
there mostly.
I know when I first started, the only reason I even gained any followers was because of a guy that I went to junior college with. He had started a clothing company back in California, and he just basically was like, "Yeah, I'll share all your stuff." And I made him a couple belts and whatnot, and but he basically just really shared all my stuff with his people, and it got me to about 10,000 followers like pretty quick or whatever. And then I mean, but that was back, like I said, in 2012. And so, I mean, it's just, I've never paid for an ad. I've never done
Right.
anything to try to
Huh.
promote. Like, it's all been organic. I've never paid for a dime of it. It's just, I think I told Carrie yesterday that I just got lucky. And like, I mean, that company that had me do a podcast with them, the Brunt Workwear, their boots and stuff, they were, when they first started, for some reason, they got a hold of me to try to help promote their business when they were first building it. And they sent me some boots and stuff, but they were some of the people that shared it a bunch, and they still shared it. So, I mean, I've just kind of got lucky and fell in line with some random people that had big followings and shared my stuff and, helped it take off. But
Do we inadvertently or assume that likes will increase the perceived value of our work?
yeah, probably.
Well,
I believe
do
so.
you think it, do you, what do you think, Willie? Does it or doesn't it? You don't think it does?
I mean, it does, but the only way we realize an increase in perceived value is if we have the courage to ask more, right?
Like, I think it's more of like a kind of a superficial, like, you might think it does, but and those likes might give you the courage to ask for more, which I've seen that in the cases of a lot of people that I've actually done classes with or like worked with personally and stuff like that, that they started getting a lot of recognition, and now hell, they charge more than I do for anything. And they're guys that I'm taught how to do stuff,
Which
which
is,
is, I mean, great for
yeah,
them, but
it's great for them. It's just, I've had this conversation before with other craftsmen. Like, there is no standard. We don't have a standard as to what something is worth. So,
no.
and it's the same way in horse training. I mean, I had a conversation with a professional horse trainer. One of his underlings was charging $250 more a month than he was. And that guy's barn was full. Well, whose fault is that, right? It's not the guy, the underling's fault. It's the pro's fault. But
Well, and I think a lot of that too for me, because I've done a lot of paintings and stuff before, because before I did leather work, I was more fine arts type stuff. And I never tried to go anywhere with it. It was always something I did for fun and I'd done forever. But a lot of that stuff is pretty much like, I mean, you price that stuff like whatever you feel like it. I mean, you want to take 5 minutes on something and price it for $10,000. It's like you can do that with certain types of art. Like, I mean, hell, some guy, I don't know if it was in New York, he duct taped a banana to a piece of paper and it sold for like $20 million or something. Like, but I think that's one of the things is like, with, I mean, I don't know about the horse training and stuff, but with artwork anyways, I feel like it's kind of like, whatever you feel like it's worth. And if you feel like you can charge more, you might find someone that'll pay it. But I don't know. With leather, I feel like there is kind of a standard on, what the like an average price for like certain things and stuff. And so, a lot of people use it as a baseline maybe, but
It is.
like I said, I guys that I do not think are all that great, but charge way more than me.
Yeah, and they're
But I get
making a
it.
living. Yeah, they're making a living, and I mean, it's just it's not an exact science, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And it's because if you're leading the charge on the price thing, it can be a very lonely feeling as well, right? I mean, it is sell it pricing a saddle for $78,500 has a bit of a
Yeah,
pucker factor, doesn't it, Schwartzy?
I had my head, my butt hanging out in the breeze, and
Yeah.
you could get it spanked or kissed,
Or kiss, and
whichever.
you got it kissed, and everything was awesome.
Yeah. You
But
had one for 78,000?
In a show last year,
Oh man, that's awesome.
Sorry, Schwartzy, I didn't mean to pull your britches down in front of everybody like
Yeah.
that. I
That's
thought Dustin
awesome.
knew.
I can see it.
Oh, he thought everybody knew
I did.
that,
I figured everybody knew.
Oh. I
Yeah.
told you yesterday, I don't follow a whole lot of guys and I don't keep up with everything. Like, I've never been to any leather shows or, done any of that stuff. I think I went to that one in, down in Texas,
Wichita Falls.
Wichita Falls. Yeah, I think I went down there one time and that was it. But that I've never gone to anything else, so I don't know a whole lot of people or the happenings of what's going on so much.
I'm thinking this formula is working for you though, Dustin.
I don't know.
We can't you can't argue with success, right? I mean,
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
why should you jump in a in the cold water with everybody else, pun intended.
Yeah. Well, damn cold water. You take cold showers, Dustin?
No. Tried it a couple times, but I don't think the benefits outweighed the whatever.
Freaking suck is what they do.
My wife got one of those. My wife's real big into health and fitness and all that stuff. That's what she does for a living. And I remember she bought us one of those cold plunge tubs this last winter or something like that. And oh my gosh, dude. I felt like every time I did it, I felt like I got sick afterwards. Like I'd get a sore throat or something. And I was like, this is not working.
Schwartzy's got me in on it, and
Don't
I don't have the cold
do the
plunge
cold
though.
plunge,
No,
though.
we don't do the
We
cold.
just cold shower. Bad
Yeah.
enough.
Maybe after a night of drinking a little bit, I'll do a cold shower.
Yeah, if you're still in the drinking aspect, you don't care, right? Back to our original conversation
No.
is we know this is gonna hurt, so our
Yeah.
judgment's there. We just don't care, so we get in, right?
Yeah. Oh,
I
yeah.
heard Rogan talk about it the other day, and he said you gotta calm the inner bitch. You gotta get control of her, right? And tell her, sit back, I'm gonna take this cold plunge. He said, because he does it 34 degree weather or
Oh, yeah.
weather, 34 degree water. And lower. I was complaining to you, Schwartzy, at 46 the other day.
34. That's brutal. That is brutal.
I broke the ice off of the tub before and jumped in it. That it's cold.
Wow. Well, Dustin, I didn't know that you've got some background in fine art. Did you have some formal training with that,
Oh,
or
just mainly just I mean, did it all throughout school. I won a few like art competitions when I was in high school. Actually, it's kind of neat. I keep this picture around. But it was a picture of my dad riding
Oh, wow.
bulls.
Yeah,
So
cool.
that was one deal I drew back when I was a junior or something in high school, maybe. Did that, and then I actually went to, when I first went to college, I was going for art and everything, and so I did all, I was doing all their, the classes they have you do, and random, it was like graphic design or something is what I was actually thinking I was trying to do. And then so you had all them other classes that you did with it, but did all that for a couple of years, and then I just got into, painting random stuff here and there, like, I mean, more abstract type stuff, and just kind of doing it to kill time and relieve some stress when I was back home taking care of my dad and stuff like that. So just kind of slapping paint and seeing what came out of it. But yeah, never, I mean, then I still do the random stuff and try to get into doing some more detailed drawings and things like that. But mainly it's all transferring on the leather and whatnot, and trying to do the molding and everything. But that's about it,
Creating and
really.
sculpting and
Yeah,
manipulating
trying to mess with
leather.
that. What do they call it? The figure carving. Yeah, so
I
for some
didn't.
reason, a lot of, what was
Sorry,
that?
I didn't
I was just
realize
saying,
it,
for
but
some reason, a
go
lot
ahead.
of people wanted to get little tiny stuff put on belts and stuff for a while. So that was kind of fun to mess around with.
I'm snooping your Instagram right now and I follow you, which,
Well, that's good to know.
yeah, you that I I'm one of the 100,000 following you here, and I had I know why I follow you now. I know why we have him on the podcast, Schwartzy. I had no idea. I don't know where I Schwartzy
You hadn't
probably
even
hooked
looked
me.
at the stuff before you
No,
had
dude, I
to
don't wor don't worry. I
come.
no,
I'm just messing with you,
yeah, I
man.
don't. I promise. Don't
You'll
look
be
at any.
liking some of your stuff here before we get done.
Yeah, I lost y'all.
Good.
Y'all just
I need the likes. I need the likes so
that
I can price my stuff
validates
higher.
our existence, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it has to
Yeah.
do with our whole self-image and
I'm gonna
identity and
raise
all.
my price because Wilson likes my stuff now.
There you
Yeah,
go. There you
exactly.
go. Willie likes it. Willie likes it. That's cool
Yeah.
stuff. So this is interesting to me. The fine art background, that's something
Yeah.
you and
You do a
I
lot of.
suppose have that in common. It sounds like you've dove into more of that early on than I did. I just played completely just played at it. I never did submit anything to for any contests or anything like that. But the one thing it seems to me in the teaching that I've done, because you talk about, oh, so and so has a gift. Okay. I always knock the edge off of that, but I've taught enough people. There are definitely some people have an ability
Yes.
and some
Yeah.
people struggle with it. There isn't any doubt about that. But if I were, and I'm my son, he's a knife maker here in Idaho and stuff, and pretty handy artist too. It's a shame he doesn't do more nowadays, but the thing that I could see with him, and then I started to recognize it in myself, is you can see things. It's the ability to see.
Absolutely.
And by that I mean you see things happening. You've developed your skills of observation to a level that you understand, you see things happening, and then you're able to make sense out of it. You said just, I don't know, 20 minutes ago, it needs to, quote, make sense. And I think that's a huge part of the journey of art is trying to make things, excuse me, make sense. Because if it makes sense and it's coherent, it's something that people can appreciate. Can you talk about some of
Yeah.
that kind of stuff?
I'll try to. Yeah, I mean, like the making sense part, for example, like I'm looking at this belt that I'm, drawing out and everything. But when I started wanting to do my, like when I was really trying to figure out how to draw my own patterns and everything, like, and I started learning more about vine work and, messing around with all that stuff. I was like, everything that's going on needs to make sense. Like, if there's something coming out from right here, there has to be something going into right there. Like, nothing is just random kind of a deal. Like, and so I always tried to figure out every little thing that could make that pattern actually look like real vine work. Like it was like it had to there like I said, there had to be something going behind this for it to come out around the other side of it or something like that. Like and that was one thing that I always really tried to figure out a way to make that look good, and a lot of times it doesn't work out. Like it, I mean, sometimes it looks better if you have random stuff coming out from behind something else or whatever. So a lot of it has been a learning process of like being okay with it not being perfect or whatever. You know, like not it doesn't always have to make perfect sense. Like if that makes sense, but
Well,
like.
absolutely. All those are guidelines. That's where, the rule, the so-called rule of making sense. I think that's the wrong word. I think it's just a guideline. Like Willie, I know what he's going to say. You got to know the rules in order to break them, right?
It's all there is to it,
Yep.
right? It's
All
all
there
there is to it.
is.
And that's been a big process for me, because for so long I was like, oh no, like I'm gonna draw the best way that makes sense. Like, and then like I said, learned a little bit more. You're still learning it, still trying to feel okay about it, because my brain wants everything to make sense and be perfect. But got I mean, it's been a process of learning how to be okay with things not making sense, and that it is still art, you know what I mean? Like, and art is all kind of just what you want it to be. It doesn't have to be anything specific. And I think a lot of guys get caught up with, you know, when they're doing floral or something like, or carving leather and doing designs with that, like it's got to look a certain way. It's got to look like this guy's stuff, or it's got to look like, you know, everything else that's been done before. But in reality, like you can make it whatever you want. And that's just the way art works, you know, in my mind, anyways. So,
It's a journey of discovery where you're just trying to discover something that maybe this combination of elements you have not seen before. The elements are nothing new under the sun, but you combine them in a way that hopefully is unique.
And that's the hard part, is because there's only so many ways you can do it, really.
It's you're telling a story in our medium, in the leather, in the steel and silver, whatever it is we're doing. You're telling a story. So when you read a book, those are all the same damn words that we've been using our whole life, right? It's the same damn words, but how are you putting the words together to tell the story? So that's exactly what you're doing. And when you say it has to make sense in the beginning, simple, you have to it can you're Let me put it this way. It can be too complex to make sense. And as we develop our skill set, we are able to increase complexity, but they'll still say it in a manner that makes sense. Like the overs and the unders and the twirls coming out from the backside, like where the hell did that come from? But I guarantee it still has to make sense or it wouldn't work.
That's one thing I struggle with a lot, is overcomplicating stuff. I mean, I just did a couple belts, and I mean, they look great. They're, you know, nothing wrong with them, but and I think that's part of just me, you know, having to never being really satisfied with everything. But I mean, in my mind, I'm like, man, there's way too much going on right here. Like, I do that with a lot of stuff, and then I'll go through phases where I'm like, all right, I was doing stuff way too complex or whatever, just trying to fit way too much stuff in something. I need to tone that back, and then I'll go the extreme opposite direction, and then I mean, I go back and forth so much trying to figure out something that I'm happy with. But
I do
I'm
too.
like, at the end of the day, I'm like, gosh, I don't know if I'm ever going to be happy with something 100%, but that's kind of the point of it, I guess, is keeps you pushing forward, trying to get better or something, you know.
Ever look back 10 years ago and go, man, why don't
I
I
was
do
way
that?
better back then.
Yeah, why don't I do that?
I did that last night. I was trying to just draw up a belt pattern, and I was like, man, I was like, there was a pattern I really liked back, and I'm like, I'm gonna figure out when that was. And I'm like, go and I find it, and I'm like, I did that shit like 6 years ago. And I was like, hey, I'm sitting there looking at my own design from 6 years ago, trying to make, and I'm like, oh, you're an idiot.
Yeah, the same thing.
You know, it's that, I don't know, I guess it's just a part and parcel of the way you get wired is you're always looking ahead. And the curse, that's a good thing, but the curse of that is that you forget. You develop amnesia for some of the things that were working 5 years ago, 10 years ago, or whatever. That was working really good, but you moved on from it. And it's just both a blessing and a curse.
So, anyways, I'm trying to draw more stuff like I did 5 years ago, so
Nothing
hopefully it
wrong
looks
with
better. But then I also think I'm like, I'm sitting here, critiquing my own stuff and being so like wanting to change it every time I finish something and everything. But at the end of the day, I'm like, as my customer and the person that ordered this, do they think it's just the coolest thing they've ever seen? And if they say yes, then I'm like, I'm okay with them, and then because like I said, I'm never gonna stop trying to figure out a better way to do something or whatever, or not being happy with everything that I'm making. And so, but if at the end of the day, if the customer really, really likes it, I'm gonna sit there and critique my stuff all day long, but they're gonna love it, and that's what actually matters,
I totally
bottom
agree.
line.
Absolutely.
That customer has to be happy.
Yeah.
And then the next little obstacle I have is Travis Stilson and Carrie. If they like it, then now I'm good. Now, right? Then that's the ultimate deal, because my dad told me that most of your customers, my dad's a fine art guy too, Dustin, and cowboy first and art painter. But anyhow, he said your customer will always like it. That's not always true. I've had customers say that's not good, right? But that's our first objective is that, and then you have a half a dozen people that actually know what the hell it is they're looking at. And like, you make the phone call to Travis, hey, look how good I did. And he says, well, actually, I can't use that, right? And you learn an awful lot from those people. And I mean, again, now if Carrie calls me, Willie, you knocked it out of the park, awesome. But I myself am the only one that actually knew what the end result was supposed to be like. And if I fell short of that in my own mind, then I still have more to work on. And obviously, we always have more to work on, right? I mean, you always have more.
I got another story about Travis telling me that I messed something up. That's kind of funny. There was, I don't know if you saw the project when you're looking through my Instagram, that there was a shave kit bag that I made that had some figure carving on it. It had a guy riding a bronc from an old famous Western photo, I think, and had done a really nice intricate floral design around it. Like, I mean, it looked good. And I built this shave kit bag and finished it out all nice, but when it got to putting the handle on this bag, I didn't have any fancy, and I was just making it to sell it. Like, I wasn't making it for anybody or anything like that. And all I had to hold this handle on was some copper rivets. And so I built this really nice fancy bag, and the handles held together with copper rivets. And Travis called me, I mean, right after I posted it, he goes, "Copper rivets?" Like, I was like, well, that's all I freaking had, man. I don't have any fancy silver laying around.
I was applying to the TCA and had an application bit, and I sent it to Mark Drain for a critique. And because I really didn't know whether I was good enough. So I had my own opinion that some of my engraving was good and some of that, but I wasn't confident in that I was good enough, right? There was no confidence that I was good enough. And I was 28 years old, 29 years old when this was going on. So I sent it to Mark. And I'd been taught you buy the little zinc brass plated nails at the hardware store, and you just put them in there and clip them off and brad them on. And that's how you keep your conchos on. I was reprimanded on that as well. I think you can make a nice rivet, Willie. I'm like, How? Like, I had no
Yeah,
idea.
what do you mean?
What do you mean? Like, well, you got the way I went, but I was like, oh wow. So I had the same experience, like, well, dang, here we go.
I still look at that bag now and I'm like, gosh dang, cover it. It's been empty.
Right. But
Like, just ruined it. But
if you don't know,
yeah, I
you
get a
don't
lot of
know,
that.
right? I mean, if you don't
No,
know.
and I mean, in my mind, I'm like, I got some other conchos that are like from, I don't know, randomly laying around from some Tandy leather store or something that somehow ended up in my shop. And, could have probably thrown some of those on there. But at the same time, I was just like, it's going to be sturdy. Like, it ain't going nowhere.
So in
Yeah.
spur making, making a pair of spurs, one of the last things that we do is put the hinges on the buttons and all that business. And I can tell a lot of times in a maker's maturity levels because of how that part is finished out. So if they're kind of half-assed done, and you can tell that it's not finished out like the rest of the spur, it's because they've lost so much money getting to that point of the project that they're like, I just got to get done, right? So
Yeah,
that attitude gets in there.
that was probably a lot that had to do with it. Like I said, I wasn't making it for a customer. I was just doing it to
Yeah.
do it. And
Get her
at that point,
down.
I was probably like, I got to get this thing sold and get it out of here so I can actually make some money off of it.
And whether or
But
not we ever make money is a whole nother conversation, but we as craftsmen, as we mature in our dedication to the integrity of the project, you finally get to a point where you're like, that doesn't work. I have to finish that properly,
Yeah, edges.
Yeah,
Gotta finish this on leather stuff. Like, I'll lose money doing trying to do nice edges on stuff just because you can finish it and then you have to sand it and then you gotta finish it again and then you gotta sand it again and I'm like, it's a process that, I mean, you could do it and get it done in 10 minutes and no one would probably know the difference, but if another guy that like Travis or someone comes around. They see it, they're gonna be like, oh, yeah, all that,
You gonna leave it that
yeah, is that, was that finished? Yeah,
I had a
that's
guy
the
in one.
famous words. You gonna leave it that way?
Yeah, you leave it that way. Oh, I hate that. I hate that. I had a guy in one of my workshops say, "Hey, Mr. Wilson, can you come over here and look at this? But leave them damn binoculars over there on the table." And that was my optimizers, right? He didn't want me to bring the binoculars.
One of the battles that we face, and there's a name for what we're talking about here. It's called completion bias. And what it is you get enough invested. Willie said it all. I've lost so much money here so far, and that's your cloud that's kind of following you around, and you're close enough to the finish line that you just want to drag it across the finish line. And boy, there's some terrible tragedies in human history where that's happened. And of course, in our world, it's nobody's losing a life over it, but
How
that's
many?
what it is. You're trying to drag a project across the finish line, that completion bias. You're trying to get it done, get it out, get a paycheck. And boy, you got to find a way to
Not do
resist
that.
that,
Who's
resist that.
and most people are exactly that way. Are that individual that we're talking about, right? Is like you're trying to get done, but there is an exceptionally few people, the John Ennises of the world, the Damien Connollys. Damien is a firearms engraver, professional engraver. Dustin from well, he came from Australia, but just incredible craftsman. Spent 9,000 hours on the case and engraving of a Colt 45. That's 4.5 years, 40 hours a week, no time off of time dedicated. He could care less how long it takes. But that thought of the fear of somebody saying, "Are you going to leave it that way?" will not leave his mind, right? It is incredible what the man does. There's very few people like that, and I admire that. I mean, I'm not going to say Damien is got his own yacht for sure, probably, I mean, he's that money's obviously not his priority, and most of us craftsmen it's not. But he definitely, it's taken a back seat. And our John's probably the same way. Ennis is Are you familiar with John Ennis's work,
Yeah, I've
Justin?
seen. Yeah, I'm not familiar with him, but I know of him.
Oh, it's just he's the king of the mountain in my world, and just it's crazy what the man can accomplish. But you know, it'll be done when it's done. That's just the way it is.
That's the one thing I struggle with a lot is wanting to just take as much time as I can possibly take and like not rush or do anything like that on any part of it, and just spend however long it takes to make something freaking perfect, or not skip any like spot of it at all or whatever. And but then you also feel like the world's moving so fast, you gotta make money, you gotta and if you spend this much time, is anybody even gonna be there to appreciate it in the end? And you get out of it what you put into it or something. But it's always, so then you get caught up in, you might find, or at least me, I know I've found myself, like Carrie said, dragging something across the finish line. And you're just like, and then you, the other part of me is, I'll end up having to remake it because I'm just like, God, I can't do that. I can't send that out the door. Like,
You don't, you don't,
I get too much pride in myself or something. But
if you don't have time to do it right, you don't have time to do it over.
yeah,
So you might as
exactly. And then you're really screwed when you're redoing the entire project. So, yeah.
Then it really gets expensive.
Yeah.
You know,
Yeah.
something that's been rattling around in my head all week here since our visit with Doug Krause is he said something, and I'll probably butcher this, but a paraphrase of what he said was, you have to be willing to be a beginner over and over and over again. And that's the humility. Approach your craft, your art with humility, and be willing to be a beginner over and over and over again. I thought that was awesome.
That is good. That is good. I
Definitely.
mean, we all want to be great, and I've said it many times, but 2 days into my career, my mom thought I was the best bent sword maker in the world. So, right? So we accomplished that feat. Now let's go back to being a beginner and learn all that we can. And it's not always easy, right? And making that living part, that's a there's a balance in between being a true craftsman. And I was going to say this a while ago. A lot of our pressure comes from our big mouth at the beginning of the project, telling somebody that we can do it for X amount of dollars. And then we allow the creative side to start, and we're limited by our big mouth saying we can do it in this time frame if we have the business sense. And that's one of the beauties of the TCA. And one of my focuses as a craftsman today, as a businessman, is the beauty of a TCA project or a showpiece, not just TCA, but any kind of showpiece, is I get to charge at the end of the day, not obligated to charge at the beginning of the day. So when I get done with the TCA project, I may or may not charge as much time as I have in it. Like I have the obligation to say, no, that's a little too much for that. Maybe I spent too much time worrying about how to do something. I wasn't productive. There's different reasons that you back up on price, which I very rarely do, but sometimes but when you have those customers that allow me to be creative and charge at the end of the day, we all have budgets, right? We all have budgets, but when they allow me to say, hey, we have a range of say $5,000 to $10,000, oh wow, that's exciting, right? So twice as much as what you would probably initially say. And then you what do you say, Carrie? The hands can get involved at that point.
Your hands inform the work of your mind. The work of your hands informs the work of your mind. And Dustin said, kind of alluded to that earlier. You were talking about, oh, you just try this and you see if this is going to work or not. That's what I'm talking about. Your hands, you put your hands on the material, on the work, and you just see what happens. And it's a and a an ex it's a exploratory adventure. You're trying to discover something, and you may walk off a cliff. You have to be willing to accept that.
What Will said, your mouth a lot of times when you're planning a project out gets you kind of almost limits you, and then once you start doing the work, your creative side, that creative part of you and being a craftsman, whatever, takes over, and I mean, it's almost just kind of something you can't even help it to have happen when you've done it. But then you find yourself trying to fight that the whole time that you're doing something. You're like fighting the clock almost. But that it's something that's hard to deal with. It's hard to battle through that, knowing that, you're only getting this much for it, but you want to put this much into it, and you want to, and then I always just end up, screwing myself and being like, all right, we're just doing it this way. I'm gonna try it, and that's
Yeah.
just the way it goes. But
Well, that's what
I've accepted that.
if you do that, that's why you've become the artist that you are now, the
Mm-hmm.
craftsman you are now. It's because if you do that and choosing to do that and maintain a business, a profitable business is a challenge, but it's absolutely possible, right? I mean, my showpieces give me the opportunity to scratch that itch that started in the middle of a project where I couldn't go all the way, right? Is I, my mind is telling me, my mind and my hands are telling me you could do this, you could do this. Well, I am limited by a budget, and everybody has one. I don't care how much money you have, everybody's got a budget. So you try to stay within those parameters, and then when that showpiece, that show opportunity gets to come up, then you get to turn yourself loose and have some fun and charge at the end of the day, right? And
Yeah,
say,
that's a
hey,
good deal.
you owe me this much. Now that doesn't mean that you don't get to keep it. I never thought I'd spend the kind of money that I've spent on some of my pieces, but I did. Here they are, right? I still own them. So it's all good.
I don't think I still own anything that I've ever built myself. I don't think maybe a wallet. I think I built a wallet once, and I still have
That's good.
that.
That is good.
Yeah.
Now he's kind of
I have
bragging.
no inventory.
He's kind of bragging now, Schwartzy. I could pull out a whole collection of stuff for you. Like, no,
You've
no.
become the single largest collector of your own work.
I had a young man in here Monday. The ag mechanics was going on. It's a 4-H ag mechanics show, and they had 900 entries within the show, and it's everything from gooseneck trailers to silver necklaces. I mean, there's a wide array of craftsmanship and skills that's going on. But anyhow, he wanted to see some stuff, so I pulled it out and I made the comment, I'm the single largest collector of my own work. So here you go. He's 15 years old looking at me like, what?
You want to
Oh
see my
man.
collection?
Yeah, you want to see my collection, my goodies.
Man. Now, I wish I could build myself some stuff and build my wife. I mean, I've built her a couple things, but build, more people close to me things. But it's always just like, man, I'm always trying to run a business and trying to stay ahead of stuff that seems like anymore, everything takes so long to get done that I'm like, I don't have time to do it. Like, it
No.
just, and they get mad at me.
A plumber's sink is always stopped up. I mean, that's just the way it is. I made myself a buckle, what, 2, 3 years ago, Schwartzy? And he built me a belt like 2 years before that. And he told me,
Takes 2 years to get there.
this is so rude of him. It was 2 years before I finally made the button. So rude of him. He said, Willie, I'm not putting one of them damn trophy buckles that you cherish so much on that damn belt. I said, the belt is too nice for that stupid trophy buckle. Build me a buckle. He said it just like that. Rude. I spent millions of dollars trying to win that damn buckle, but he's like, oh no. No, you can't. Millions of hours and
You have a
dollars.
better memory than I do of that
Well, let's
conversation.
not let the truth get in the way of this story. It's a good story.
Okay,
And that's how I interpreted, Willie, I'm not putting one of your buckles. Make me a buckle. That, I mean, that's probably all you said, but that's how I interpreted all that.
Absolutely. I was in Arizona there last week and went into a shop down there that It's called Saddlebags, right there in Old Town Scottsdale, Arizona. And they had a bunch of new bowling stuff in there.
Oh, wow.
And so it was kind of interesting to see some of that. And there was a buckle in there that had a bronc figure going back decades. I don't know how long. I got a buckle like that. I had an old time saddle maker here gifted me one with a 10 karat gold bronc figure on it. I broke that thing out and I thought, you know, I'm going to make a belt and wear that thing. Wear my old bowling buckle.
And you're mad about me wearing a nice Giss
That's
buckle
right.
and you're gonna wear that crappy
Yeah,
ass bowling? I said it on the public airwaves.
but it's this the historical significance. Is there not value added to that?
Perceived value.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
Perceived value. You perceive that that's good quality work because everybody says
Oh, it's
bowling's a deal, you know, and
yeah. I get
Lord.
it. It ain't. It's nothing like a Willy buckle, and
No,
no.
no, no, no. I'm not a silversmith, so I don't get to play in this
Oh,
category, you know.
that's right.
That's
We
Scott
can't
and
cross
Bo.
up. We can't cross over and do
Did
that. So.
Young, Sean, and you know that world. That's their world.
So,
Go ahead,
you're
Dustin.
not a silversmith?
No, I'm a bitten sperm maker. So
Okay, so that's there's a difference.
yes, absolutely, which took me a while to
Okay.
understand this too. But a silversmith is going to make everything out of precious metals. So,
Okay. And you're making it out of like iron and
iron, everything has a base foundation of steel. So, will I do a buckle? Absolutely. But it's all steel. Well, yeah,
okay.
it starts out steel, and then I'll put as much silver and gold as you want in it or
Yeah.
around it or on top of it. I can cover the whole damn thing in silver if you want me to, but it is a steel buckle, right? And so,
That's cool. Okay.
and it took me a while to, Scott Hardy's the one that kind of pushed me that way. And then coming in Texas, and you know, I mean, if you were a bit and spur maker, you built a few bits and spurs on the side, but you mostly did silver work. It's kind of what it,
Yeah.
I mean, I did a lot of sterling buckles, trophy buckles, different things like that. And Scott asked me, he said, you know, what are you going to be when you grow up? I'm a member of the TCA as a bit and spur maker. I'm like, what, you can't read? Of course, I'm a bit and spur maker. What do you mean? What am I going to be when I grow up? He said, well, why are you doing all this silver work? And it took him a couple years of talking to me, you know, for me to kind of get my head wrapped around it. In the beginning too, it was like I was hungry. I was trying to feed a family and start a family and needed to make a living. So I was taking every damn order I could possibly take. And so I did trophy buckles. I did a whole bunch of stuff. And invariably I was frustrated in the middle of those projects because I wasn't trained, so to speak, by a silversmith. I'd never been in a true silversmith shop. So forming silver and all that. Could I engrave it? Sure. Could I solder? Yes. It's a different, there's some difference in the soldering of silver solder than there is in bits and spurs, but it was kind of the same in a lot of, I thought it was. So I could kind of get through it and my engraving was good enough I could cover it up. But the day I started being a full-time bit and spur maker, that meant I spent all of my time being a bit and spur maker. It is truly what I wanted to be. I did that other just to make a living. And I had 4 years worth of orders. So when the minute I quit taking silversmith orders, I was only 2 years behind, and my skill set got better with the iron, and I've not regretted it 1 minute. Now,
That's cool.
I will say that as a young man, like the young man that was in here Monday, he's 15 years old, do it all, man. Carve leather, build bits and spurs, do your silver, go figure it out. You may like one more than you do the other. Figure it out. But the individual that ultimately focused, now let's take my mind just went blank last week. Doug,
Doug
take
Kraus.
Doug Krause. He does everything. He does it all. I might argue that Doug is more creative and happier mentally by getting to do a little all of it. Right? I mean, because he does his hair ropes, you know, butters his bread, but he does. He may be fed more because he has a little bit here and a little bit there. I'm not that guy. I like to focus myself.
Yeah,
I don't know. That's
everybody's different.
I try way too many things. I try to do way too much stuff. I like doing the intricate style of leather and carbon and everything, but then I also really, really appreciate making simple stuff that has like one single like logo stamped on it or something, and just really focusing on the construction side of something and
Man,
building, you know,
that's awesome. If it's in leather, you're
so
doing good. You're staying focused to me. If you're staying in leather,
yeah, absolutely.
It's just anytime I do all that, man, I'll make stuff that's just real simple, like, but I think it's just the cleanest, coolest stuff I've ever seen, and have a huge respect for it, and I'll be like, everybody's gonna want this too, you know, and
Right.
especially because, you know, I made it or something, you know, and so then I'll be like, hey, got these for sale. And I mean, I have a collection of that stuff that I've made because
Right.
I don't ever sell it because no one
Yeah.
ever wants it, it seems like. So, yeah. So
My favorite.
I got myself a new wallet for every day of the week because I've never sold one of
My
them.
favorite pieces, Dustin, are the ones I have. My favorite pieces from the TCA show are usually the last ones to sell. For what, I guess I don't have a good taste. I don't know, but I'll be like, oh, I like this, you know, and nobody likes it. Yeah, well.
It's wild to me, 'cause but then I see all these other guys are making a completely blank belt or something like that, and it's kind of a weird deal 'cause you'll see that they got thousands of likes on some video of them cutting a belt strip out and stamping their logo on it, and you're like, why doesn't no one like the ones that I do? Like they're the same exact thing. But I don't know, it's
likes.
a weird deal.
Yeah,
Yeah,
I
likes.
think it comes down to that coherence deal that we talked about earlier. There's nothing simpler than a plain belt, and this just really solid craftsmanship and all that kind of thing. We think if we throw everything in the kitchen sink at it, well, people are just gonna love it. Well, not so much.
Not so
Yeah,
much.
not so much at all. But yeah, no, I don't know. It's still a fun journey, man. I wrestle with it a lot. Sometimes I'm like, man, am I going to be doing this when I'm, you know, I think I was talking to Carrie about that yesterday, you know, imagining retiring or something. But you're like, yeah, that's not ever going to happen. So I'm like, I'm okay with sitting in my shop every day for pretty much the rest of my life. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, there's a lot, I've done a lot worse jobs, and I prayed for this to be a thing many a times.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Just change your mind around to thinking that. So I tell everybody, Dustin, that I retired at 25 years old. I retired to do exactly what I wanted to do, and I've been working my ass off every day since then to maintain retirement, right? But
That
I'm
and
retired.
that's such a good perspective on it, because I think I went full time with leather work because I actually got in an argument with a boss of mine at the job I was working at, because I always knew I wasn't meant to be a mechanic and work on tractors my whole life, and so I was pretty bitter going into work every day, and knew I just wanted to do leather work, it finally boiled over to where I ended up leaving work and never went back, and been doing this ever since. But it's been such a weird deal because I sit there and I'm like, man, I literally, like, this is the stuff that retired people do, like, you know. And I'm like, just like what you said, I've been retired since 2015 and just trying to stay retired, you know what I mean?
Yeah, work a lot more hours, right? Sun up to sun down and all
And
that. But yeah,
it
it's
gets to
fun.
feeling like a job, but at the end of the day, like I said, I mean, I used to pray for this to be a thing that I could do, and you know, you can't lose sight of that stuff, you know, but it's a cool way to make a living, that's for sure. I definitely
If
surprise people when they ask me what I do for a living, people that
yeah.
don't know me or whatever. It's an interesting conversation when I'm like, oh, I'm a leather, I don't even know what to call it. I'm like, I'm a leather crafter or leather worker. Like, I don't, I tool leather for a living. I don't know. Like, but
Well, you just tell them that, I just lock myself in this small room and I make smaller pieces of leather out of big pieces of leather, and sometimes I put flowers on them. And the room isn't padded. They don't. It's the room is not even padded.
they haven't put me in the straitjacket yet.
I get.
I that is something I've told. I think I actually heard my daughter tell somebody this, and someone was asking Asked me what I did for a living, and I think my daughter piped up and goes, "He draws flowers for a living."
Yeah.
They're like, "What?"
I do the same thing, Dustin. I'm 6'3" and 220 pounds, and I draw flowers for a living, right?
I think my a bunch of my wife's friends, they call me Ferdinand because I'm 6 foot, 205 pounds, and whatever. Like I said, my wife's real into fitness, so she drags me over there all the time. But they call me Ferdinand because of that bull that likes flowers all the time or whatever. And
Well, if we're gonna pray for rain, we can't gripe about the mud. So
no,
here we
absolutely
are.
not. And I gotta remind myself of that a lot. Sometimes like you get caught up with just order after order and not being able to really like kind of feel like you can't really explore the creative side of stuff as much as you want to. And even just doing the same types of projects over and over again, like it's I randomly got into doing the center consoles. I never wanted to do one ever. And I had a good customer of mine that he'd ordered a bunch of stuff from me before, shave kits, wallets, belts, lots of things. And it was right about time when people were starting to build the covers, but they were building them on little slip over covers and putting them on consoles that way. And I was like, I'm never doing that. That looks terrible. Like, I'm not gonna do any of that stuff. And he's like, I'm gonna send you a console lid off my new pickup and you can just do it whenever you get time, do whatever you want to do. And I was like, man, I don't want to do that. And he's like, well, I'm sending it to you anyway, so you're gonna have one in your shop. And I was like, all right, fine. So I have this console in my shop for, I don't know, 6 or 7 months. And then I finally kind of got tired of looking at it and figuring out how it could even be done in a way that looked good. And I got to messing with it, and finally was like, all right, dude, I'm working on your console, whatever, and he's like, oh, well, you can just have it because that truck burnt down and I don't even have the truck anymore. And I was like, oh. And I'd already started on it at this point, and I was like, well, I guess I'll try to sell it or auction it off or just see if anybody even likes these things. And like I said, I didn't want to build one because I did not want to dive into that market or get involved with that at all. I was pretty content where I was at, and I finished it out. And I mean, I think that's when that following or whatever of mine, because at that time I just my wife talked me into getting a TikTok, and I did not want to do that either. So I was like, I'm tired of Instagram and Facebook. I don't want another thing to deal with. And she's like, but post this thing on TikTok. And so I did that, and I think my TikTok grew like 50,000 followers within that off of that first thing I ever built for those consoles. And I was like, oh, it's like, well, maybe this some a guy might be able to make a little bit of money building these things or something. I don't know. Like, and there is a little bit of there's pretty good creative freedom with them because you have a lot of space to work with. But like I said, I never wanted to do it, and then I just kind of fell into it off of that guy that just sent me one, and then his truck burnt down, and then people really liked it, and I was like, oh man, now I'm stuck doing these things. And
Control demand through price, right? And
I mean,
if the price is good enough, well, I don't mind doing it as bad, right?
well, and that was kind of what I did. I was like, well, I'll auction it and see what people are maybe willing to pay. So I think I put it on eBay, and that thing sold for like $1,200 or something like that. And I was like, well, I had this. I was like, all right. And I was like, I could probably work with
Do the
that,
math on it.
And all my friends are like, I will set up this business for you. You gotta start making these things and all this stuff. And I'm like, yeah, hey, you gonna come build them for me too? Like, because that'd be nice. That's the one thing. You can't get nobody to come help you in a shop, it seems like. I don't know.
that is a thing. I got one, and you see him walking around behind me. And he runs his own business out of here, but it's
That's
cool.
cool. Yeah, I've had a couple guys try to come in, and they just, I mean, it's one of the deals where they'll come in, and it seems like they learn what they want to learn and figure out what they need to do. And then they are like, well, I can make more money than you can pay me every day. So I'm like, I don't blame you. Yeah, you can. Yeah. But sure was nice having you put belts together for me.
I think there's a bit of a revolving door, and always, and Eli's on his way to having his own shop, and needs to. I actually encouraged it. I encouraged it for him. It's like, look, dude, you need to grow and be a big boy, because you are a big boy in talent, right? I mean, he has big boy talents, and so he needs to go off and use those to the maximum of his ability. So it's a it is a wonderful thing, but it's also a challenge. Sharing your personal space is I've been in a shop 20 years by myself, and now you share that personal space, you're like, huh. And it's not his fault. Not his fault at all. It's all me, right? It's like you just learning
Don't
how to
touch.
deal with all that. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well.
I got to work in a couple of shops randomly, like here and there. Nothing like that was long term or anything. It was just kind of like go down, learn a few things. Like I said, I went down to Travis's house and spent a little time with him, and then I got to do a little bit of spend a little time with Monty Reedy and learning, but picked up a lot of different things, learned a lot of stuff from everybody that I've spent time with, So it was nice going from the way I had always done leather work by myself, learned how to do it watching YouTube videos, and never had anybody there to help me, never asked anybody for any help, to having a couple guys like invite me down or tell me it was I could come down. It was kind of neat. I like that and enjoyed that a lot.
For
So I
sure.
do encourage anybody that's trying to do that to, if they get a chance, definitely
Get out.
take them up on. Yeah, get out
Absolutely.
there. But
Good advice. Good advice.
Fortune,
every now and
do we go to work?
Yeah, we
then.
better. We were turn dusting loose. We're carving into his day here, so
Well, yeah, we have to
I'm
pay him
retired. It's okay.
to. Yeah, we're retired. That's right.
There you go.
Alarm went off at 3 o'clock this morning so I could maintain retirement. So,
Wilson, can I ask? I'm just
sure.
curious, how old are you? You said you've been doing it 20 years.
So I have 25, 26 this year. I'm
Yeah.
51.
Okay.
I
Awesome. Well,
I quit. I quit. I worked for Greg Darnell. I moved in with him when I was 20 years old, I guess, 19 or 20. And I quit him when I was 25 years old, and been doing it ever since.
that's cool. Yeah. I just turned 39, so I always try to figure out,
Yeah. Stay hooked,
what's
man.
gonna look like when I'm 50.
That black beard you got's gonna look like this. You got a daughter, that's gonna increase on this.
Oh man, yeah, it's happening.
How old's your daughter?
She's gonna be 10 this year,
Perfect.
so
I got
yeah, getting to
14 and
that age,
16.
starting to get a little emotional, and I'm not. I look at my wife, and she's like, "You ready for that?" I'm like, "What's going on? I'm like, what is
Did you not have a sister
it?"
growing up?
No, sir, all
Oh,
brothers.
you
She's
are a
the
boy.
first girl in my family in like 87 or 89 years.
Oh, dude,
Wow.
you got my number. It was on the text message. You can call me.
Yeah.
You got a whole awakening showing up, I can promise you.
Gosh dang it.
About 5 years.
Yeah, yeah, 5 years. I'm like, damn it.
When my sister turned 15, I asked my mom, I was like, Mom, what in the world? What's up with Liz? She's like, don't worry, she'll be back in a couple years. I think it was 13 to 15, about 13 to 15. And we were best of friends, and we are again. But that 13 to 15, I didn't know whether we were friends or not. It was exciting.
Yeah, I knew I was gonna have a girl. I did too much. I this payback for everything my life.
I got two of them, and we're not going to talk about my past, but I have two girls, so there we go.
Yep, got two of them.
I got two
I
of
know,
them.
and I would have another one. I guarantee it if my wife would let me.
There you go.
But
It's all good.
man, I really appreciate you guys letting me talk with you. It's been really fun kind of getting to know you guys, and I hope I do get to see y'all at some show or something down the road.
Absolutely. Get out a
Be
little bit.
you bet.
Stick your head out so we can see you. I know.
I need to, man. I definitely would like to for sure, but.
Bring
Well, you're
some of
not too
those.
far from Oklahoma City. Can
Yeah.
I've been up to the show up there before, but it was after everybody it was like after it started when they just had them on display, you know. I've been up there and looked at a lot of the stuff. It was pretty cool.
It's
But
safer that way to go after we've all
that
left.
I'm not gonna lie, it was always a goal of mine when I first started. I was like, then I learned about the TCA and all that. I was like, man, that's the place to be. I was like, I'm gonna have to try that out one day, maybe. I don't know, but
Well,
be pretty cool.
stay in
Matt,
touch. Be sure up there. Give us a holler so we'll
I
keep an
will.
eye out for you.
Absolutely.
Well, definitely appreciate y'all having me on and taking time out of your mornings to talk to me and stuff. It's pretty cool.
You the
It's
man.
been
Fun. Been really fun.
Appreciate you, Dustin.
All right. Take care, you
All right,
guys.
guys.
Adios.